Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Start the clock. Good afternoon. At the noon, time will be real time.
For the last 18 years, Bill Maher has set the boundaries of where funny political talk can go on American television. First, on Politically Incorrect, and for the last 7 years on HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher.
Last 10 years.
It's been 10 years?
Can you believe it? I don't know where the time goes, but somehow I do keep getting older.
So you've actually been doing this type of show for 20 years.
Unbelievable. I know. I was barely shaving when I started. At least in my mind.
He's responsible for the film Religious, which is gone on to become the seventh highest grossing documentary ever, unless that number has changed as well.
Yes, because that damn Penguin movie, that was a documentary. That got classified as a documentary, March of the Damn Penguins, and that got ahead of us. And also Michael Jackson's This Is It movie is technically a documentary. So I think we're down to nine or something.
He is also the author of...
Damn you, Penguins and Michael Jackson.
He has written four bestsellers, including his most recent, The New Rules. He started his career as a stand-up comedian in 1979, still performs at least 50 dates a year, including at the Palace Theater in Albany on Sunday at 8 o'clock. And we welcome officially Bill Maher to the roundtable. Thanks for taking
officially
the time.
Hello.
Officially. Is this a good time to be out and about near around Election Day talking about all of the stuff that's going on?
It is always a good time when the Republicans are in Washington to be doing stand-up comedy. But yes, I mean, this is probably a richer time than ever. I thought this would be a down year because it was after an election year, after all, when the horse race is over. And yet our audience is bigger than ever. I think people understand that there is so much at stake right now, first of all, about the direction of the country and where it's going, and they're just interested. And truly, you know, the right wing has never been crazier. I mean, even other Republicans concede that now. Even other Republicans are scared at what the Tea Party people are doing. I mean, because after all, by shutting down the government last month and almost crashing the economy with the debt ceiling nonsense, they could have lost other Republicans a lot of money. And if it's one thing Republicans don't want to do, it's lose money. So, you know, it was one thing when they created this monster of the Tea Party, this Frankenstein, but now it's, you know, throwing little girls into the lake, so they're upset.
Do you understand at all the tactic of trying to hold it up, given the fact that there have been elections over it, there have been Supreme Court decisions over it?
Never did. I mean, I would prefer, instead of taking the government hostage, take an actual hostage. Just take Miley Cyrus and put a gun to her head and say, unless we get what we want, she goes. No, it made no sense at all to say, you know, Obama will not negotiate about Obamacare. Yes, because it's a law. It's not a bill. A bill becomes a law if it's passed, which it was passed. And then, as you mentioned, affirmed by the Supreme Court. And who cares what your opinion of this is? Your opinion doesn't matter anymore. It reminds me of that award show they have on ESPN every year. You ever see that?
The ESPY Award, sure.
The sports award show. It is the stupidest show ever because in sports, we do not need an award show because we know who won.
Yeah,
we actually played games. So to get up there and go for best football team, yes, the winner of the Super Bowl would be the best football team. We don't care what your opinion is now. And I don't care what their opinion is of Obamacare. It's the law.
And it seemed at the time when all of it was going down as far as the shutdown of Washington that people were saying, conservatives were saying, well, you know, this is unfortunate. Conservatives who are leery of the Tea Party were saying that this is unfortunate because our issue could be instead the disastrous rollout of
Well, it is.
Healthcare.
I mean, certainly the Democrats lost probably at least half the ground they had gained after the government shutdown, because that was the first time when you saw Americans who are usually given to the idea of the false equivalency. They usually like to go, oh, a pox on both their houses. Yeah. Why can't they just get along? This time, I think Obama had an edge of over 20 points of people who blamed the Republicans rather than him for the shutdown. But yeah, he gave away most of that territory right back with the horrible Obama website. Of course, you know, it is a bit of hypocrisy on the Republican side that they are absolutely outraged that this thing that they never wanted to work is not working. But, I mean, it's still a big unforced error on the Democrats' part. And then this whole thing about if you have your plan and you like it, you can keep it, period. Well, that turned out to be not exactly true for everybody. And, you know, I've had Democrats on the show the last 2 weeks who are trying to massage that truth. But I think they'd be better to just own up to it and say, yeah, you know what? He shouldn't have put it that way. It does look like a lie.
And the fact that it's a huge system. It's a huge new program.
Right.
When we look at it, compare it to the Medicare and Medicaid system put in by the Bush administration, looking even back to Social Security, it's a huge system. So you can't expect everything to go right, or can you?
No. Oh, of course you can't. But, I mean, obviously it's not the Republicans' job, in their view, to help. I mean, after all, this is something that they are so apoplectic about. They tried to repeal it against, you know, all odds that it would ever happen, and of course it didn't. They tried to repeal it like 42 times. They filibustered. They were willing to shut down the government. I mean, they went to the mat on this thing. They are living in this Ronald Reagan world where it's socialized medicine that's going to rob us of our freedom. You know, you subsidize one kid's inhaler, and then every kid is going to think breathing is an entitlement, and there goes our freedom. And you know, I can't understand it. I can't get into their heads. I don't know why you would want to go to the mat about denying your fellow citizens the right to see a doctor. It seems something that every other big boy country has already figured out. But that's where they are. That's where they are. And all we can hope for is that, you know, enough of the American people see through that. And I think they do.
When you say they think they do, how confident are you that they see that, that they perhaps see the hypocrisy of the Tea Party and the growing divisions within the Republican Party?
Well, I mean, I'm never that confident in what the American people see, but I think it's good for progressives that there is a civil war going on in the Republican Party. That's, I think, helpful, because as long as they're fighting themselves, they have less energy to fight what really matters, and they are fighting themselves. Now, today we see Chris Christie walking away with the victory there in my home state of New Jersey. And it's, I think, going to be either him. I mean, he is that more of the old school Republican. You know, he's more what I call the potty trained Republicans. And it's either going to be him or it's going to be someone from the Tea Lagoon, like Ted Cruz. And I am looking forward to this fight between Christie and Cruz, even though I think Christie may even already be toast, because, of course, during Hurricane Sandy, he hugged President Blackenstein, so he's already got Kenya cooties. So he may not be qualified for the job in their view at all. But if he can get beyond that, if they can forget that he held hands with him on the beach, I think that could be a great race, a great way to expose what's going on in the Republican Party.
And on the Democratic side, do you believe it will be Hillary Clinton?
Well, I think everyone believes it'll be Hillary Clinton. I mean, the only thing the Republicans have to throw against her, and they keep trying to do it, is this Benghazi nonsense. You know, they are obsessed with Benghazi, which happened on the anniversary of 9/11. And Dick Cheney said, you know, we were always on our guard on the anniversary of 9/11. Yeah, you know what? There wouldn't be an anniversary of 9/11 if you had been on your guard. Remember, you got CIA memos with titles like Osama bin Laden is standing right behind you, and you ignored it. So they got some nerve trying to pin that on Hillary Clinton, as if that's her job anyway, as head of the State Department. What is she supposed to do? Call every single consulate around the world before she goes to bed and ask what it looks like there, and then have her shock troops defend them? That's not what the State Department does or has. But that's all they got to throw against her, so that's what we're going to see for the next year.
Let's talk about real time for a few minutes. It's a great show. It's obviously a format that you're very comfortable with.
Thank you.
At what point is it difficult to get Republicans on the show?
Well, it's good. It's difficult to get Republican sitting politicians on the show. That's for sure. It's not that hard to get retired, sometimes very recently retired, Republican politicians on the show, because once they're retired, of course, then somehow they are allowed to be honest in a way they aren't previously. Now, of course, Fox News makes it their life goal to keep Republican politicians off my show, and they never ever tire of going after me, and whatever I say on Friday night, they will find a way to like stir the pot on that. So that's fine. But yeah, it does make it difficult when they put out basically a fatwa on me to book a Republican politician.
And do they really have that power?
They have the power over a lot of people. I mean, you more than on the left. You saw it with Rush Limbaugh. Remember when a couple of years ago when they were saying Rush Limbaugh is the most powerful person in the Republican Party?
Right.
Yes. I mean, they are the Republican politicians fear way more than Democratic politicians what their echo chamber media says, because that's where all the power is on the right. I mean, Democrats don't need to listen to radio all day long or TV to tell them what they think. They already know what they think. But somehow the Republicans, that's why Rush Limbaugh is so powerful. And Fox News and Matt Drudge, they like to have it drummed into their head. And they live in that bubble where no actual facts or information get in. And so if you piss off Rush Limbaugh, you are in big trouble. So that's why you never see them denounce those guys.
How much of it is a balance on your show to keep it not just talking heads droning on about subjects and preaching to the choir, and still maintain the comedy?
Well, that takes place mostly, I think, in the casting process. You know, it's who you book for the show.
Yeah.
If you book people, and this is one reason, by the way, why it's not a tragedy that we don't have a lot of sitting Republican politicians, because when they're sitting politicians, that's what they do. They spout talking points. And look, the Democrats do it too. I had on Debbie Wasserman Schultz last week. She's a big deal in the
right.
Democratic Party, and I like her, and I hope she stays in Congress. But she did stick to the talking points. You know, she wouldn't allow that Obama had said anything close to a lie about, you know, you can keep the health plan if you want. And I mean, again, I think it's silly, but that's what sitting politicians do. No, we would rather go after the people who feel free, who feel their tongue is loose and can say whatever they want to say. And when you get those kind of people, I think it is it's a much more interesting discussion.
And do you decide? You saw Ann Coulter on the show just recently, and you labeled her as a friend, and I choked a little, but okay. And do you decide? Okay, she's good for the panel, or I because in that case you just sat her down and talked to her pre-panel on a one-on-one.
The problem with I would book Ann on the panel. Other people won't be on the panel with Ann. That's how toxic she is. So, you know, if you're going to have her on, you almost have to have her on in isolation.
You asked her, and I'm paraphrasing, but you asked her if she believes her own nonsense.
Well, that's what everyone says to me when they say, you know, I know you're friends with Ann for 20 years, and it's true. I mean, that is a friendship that goes back to Politically Incorrect in 1993. And they ask two things, you know, how can you be friends with someone who is obviously so different in their political views? And what I always say, well, you know, whenever I see Ann, we never talk about politics, you know, because we know we would just fight about it. And if you stay away from politics, she is not unlike so many other Republicans. They can be very charming as long as you don't get on to political matters. And the other thing they want to know is, yeah, Is she sincere? Could anyone really believe what she says? And I have to tell you, I would rather report, no, it's all an act. I don't think it is. I think it's, and this is, again, a much more depressing conclusion to come to, that they really believe this, and they do. They really believe in, you know, that poor people are takers, and you know, health care is something that's going to rob them of their freedom, and I don't know what their silly excuses are, but I know this. For a party that's always bragging about how close they are to Jesus Christ, it seems to be the exact opposite of the message he would be bringing.
So when you have someone on the program that is a polar opposite in opinion, you really do want to get a sense of what they're saying and where they're coming from, don't you? It seems like you're fascinated by that.
Yeah. I mean, I want people to feel on this show like they're not on a show. I want it to feel like a cocktail party. I want them to forget there's cameras, and of course it's impossible to do that completely, and audience, and just, that's one of the great benefits of being on HBO, of course, is that I am able to talk to people just the way I normally would talk to the people, whether we were sitting in a restaurant or in the green room after the show or before the show or having a cocktail somewhere. And that's the feel I want to get for the show, because that's what you don't see too much on television.
When you started stand-up in 79, as I mentioned in the introduction, was politics as heavy a part of the act?
It was always what I was interested in, because my father was a newsman in the New York area. He was on WOR in New York for a long time, back when every radio station had news at the top of the hour, and he was that guy who wrote and read the news at the top of the hour. So it was always something that was in my home. It was always what was interested me. And when I started doing stand-up, I did do political material. It's just that I was so young, it didn't have any resonance. And people in the audience looked at me like, what is this kid doing talking about national and world affairs? He's barely shaving. And you know, it was the kind of material that it did take some growing into before the audience accepted it.
And you're going to be at the Palace Theater in Albany on Sunday, and it's a mix. It's not all politics, but it's a mix.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly, and that's the thing I love about doing a comedic stand-up act that is mostly out of the paper, is that it's always changing. And, you know, if you saw me a year ago, it's probably nothing that I'm doing today, because a year ago, no one knew who Ted Cruz was.
Right. Oh, the good old days.
Yeah.
Bill Maher will be at the Palace Theater in Albany on Sunday, November 10th at 8 p.m. You can find out more by going to palacealbany.com. Bill Maher, I'm a huge fan. I look forward to seeing you on Sunday, and I thank you very, very much for spending time with us this morning.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate the plug.
Thanks so
okay.
much.
Take care.
Again, Bill Maher at the Palace Theater in Albany on Sunday at 8 o'clock. You can find out more by going to palacealbany.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.